In August 2025, the Wall Street Journal reported that the United States government is considering to take a financial stake in Intel. A bit later, Bloomberg reported that the U.S. government is looking to take a 10% stake via CHIPS Act money. The Intel situation is fluid, and my style of work is not suited for these strange 24-second news cycles nowadays. Things change on a dime. But I have an idea that I want to write about. One of Intel's problems is that its old monopoly is dying. So to revive it, I think Intel should get access to NVIDIA's crown jewels. In today's video, a modest proposal regarding Intel. By the way, I just want to let you guys know that I'll be in Arizona for SemiCon West in early October. If you're going, shoot me an email and let's meet up. So what seems most likely about to happen is that the United States government and a few aligned investors first take a stake in Intel. The government puts up money to finish the fab in Ohio, then raises tariffs to a high number with some carve-outs to satisfy the crowd, and then they will apply pressure to the tech giants to get them to throw some orders at Intel Foundry. There's a comment on the Wall Street Bets thread on the story that succinctly lays down the sentiment. Dude is 100% gonna nudge, quote-unquote, Apple and NVIDIA to use their 14A foundries. This is gonna skyrocket by EOY 2026 in the hundreds. Doug O'Loughlin of Fabricated Knowledge agrees and adds that pressure might also be applied onto the semiconductor equipment companies too. Additionally, forcing semiconductor companies like KLA, Applied Materials, and Lam Research to invest and give resources in exchange for approved licensees is another example of a carrot and a stick. A few companies have already started to turn on this perceived trajectory. For instance, just as I write this, Intel has announced that SoftBank agreed to make a $2 billion investment into them. Considering how Masa invests, I'm not surprised he's first through the gate. There's news that he was in talks to buy Intel's fabs. Maybe that will happen by the time you see this. As I said before, this seems to be what the plan is. A Girl Scout cookie drive to raise money for Intel, raise tariffs, shake out some orders. I've no doubt that the US government will speak loudly and waggle a stick, but as Waito of SemiAnalysis has put it in a recent episode of the Transistor Radio podcast, the result would be a coalition of the unwilling. They are there because they have to be, not because they want to. Bullying the seven American tech giants, Meta, Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Tesla, to come together would be a monumental effort. When have we seen all seven, or even a majority of these seven, work together on a business initiative that has gone anywhere? I am reminded of US memories. In the late 1980s, the Semiconductor Industry Association tried to assemble an American coalition to fund an effort to make DRAMs in the United States. Seven American companies nominally agreed to join, including three major computer manufacturers. But less than a year in, DRAM prices started falling, and with supply more than fulfilled, the DRAM buyers like Apple and Sun lost interest, or worse, ran out the clock, hemming and hawing until things fell apart. Intel has yet to produce a leading-edge chip for a third-party customer. A foundry is like a bakery. Right now, Intel's cake menu is limited because its kitchen has, for so long, been optimized just for Intel x86 CPUs. Expanding a menu takes years, and many skills, and many mistakes. Now, we want them to take on orders from seven of the world's biggest, most demanding customers for hundreds of thousands of the most sophisticated cakes ever made, vastly different cakes too, and deliver these cakes on time and in excellent working condition. Good luck. I want to discuss a few other scenarios that has come to my attention in recent days. Doug mentioned MP Materials' rare earths deal with the Department of Defense. Rare earths have many uses, but the most significant are powerful permanent magnets used in electric motors, hard drives, and more. The People's Republic of China famously monopolizes the supply of rare earths through superior refining capacity and market-distorted low prices. The whole market is worth about $3 billion. The US government understands this, so classic industrial policy from Europe and Asia, we back a national champion. MP Materials owns the Mountain Pass mine in California. In July 2025, the US Department of Defense announced a $400 million investment into MP. DoD also agreed to acquire 100% of the output from a magnet refinery that MP is building with the price set at a cost-plus basis. This will probably work for rare earths, especially if we accept the environmental damages that we know will come with refining them. But rare earths are commodities dug out of the ground. They're not chips imbued with IPs provided by third-party companies and customers. Moreover, the numbers involved are just phenomenally larger here in the Intel scenario. People estimate that Intel needs something like $40 billion to finish its fabs. Moreover, the fabs must also be upgraded so to stay at the leading edge, so continual capital influxes over the years. There have been a few proposals that involve TSMC, the market leader. A few weeks back, the Taiwanese news media reported that one of the conditions that the U.S. wanted from Taiwan in exchange for a lower reciprocal tariff rate was that TSMC take a 49% stake in Intel. And a few months ago, before Lip-Bu Tan became the CEO, there was news in the New York Times that TSMC could take control of Intel's plants as part of a larger split. A third proposal also comes to mind. Writer and friend of the channel Tim Culpin of Culpium has long predicted that TSMC will someday spin off its Arizona assets as a publicly traded subsidiary. So how about we merge TSMC's U.S. assets with Intel's? We can also fold in GlobalFoundries, Texas Instruments, and all the other semiconductor companies too. Yeah, let's do it. On a technical level, however, TSMC and Intel's process nodes are different and incompatible with each other. TSMC wants nothing to do with Intel's nodes, and if they got into an Intel fab, all they would want is the equipment. And the culture clashes would make all the toxicity of the Arizona build look like a walk in the park. I asked a TSMC manager before about a TSMC-Intel merger, and he said that Intelers might be afraid of TSMC, but TSMC managers are afraid of Intel employees. So no, I don't think these three scenarios or whatever will work. So here goes my new idea. The thing that I want to hone on is what I believe to be the source of Intel's massive profits. Those profits do not come from semiconductor manufacturing excellence. Rather, it's the opposite. Intel leverages its profits to fund an advanced semiconductor manufacturing division. Intel has certainly before integrated a few impressive technologies into its process nodes, but they didn't originate those technologies. Like, the high-K metal gate was first explored by IBM, Semitech, and other companies in the industry, though I am aware that Intel pioneered the gate-last method that properly integrated high-K metal gate. Two other iconic semiconductor technologies were copper interconnects and EUV. Again, IBM invented the Damascene techniques that made copper interconnects possible, and as we know, a Japanese researcher first proposed EUV and the core technology pioneered by the US government's Department of Energy. Intel did help fund and move that effort towards commercialization, though. So I just want to say that I give Intel full credit for executing on these technology integrations. But research is a terrible business, that's why it's done by nonprofits, and it's far easier to execute when money is no object. So where does Intel's massive profits in the 1980s and 1990s come from, if not manufacturing? They came from Intel's aggressive sales, slick marketing, and above all, IP lock-in. Wilf Corrigan, founder and former CEO of Fairchild, recalls in an oral history, "One company controls the whole industry, like De Beers controls the worldwide diamond business. This is an IP control. It's not because, necessarily, Intel can manufacture better than anyone else, though they're a very good manufacturing company today. It's really the control of the IP, the intellectual property, the patents, the legal position, the copyright control, and so on, which nobody's been able to break." Wilf has a right. Throughout American history, control over special IPs has consistently built monopolies, at first through patents, like in the case of AT&T and Marconi, and then later industry standards like the Wintel PC. Intel funds its fabs through its grip on IP, that special IP being its x86 instruction set architecture, that set of special instructions that a software can tell a CPU's hardware to perform on data first implemented with microcode. When x86 lots its place in the computing world, thus so did Intel. So, what can we do? If we can't bring back the x86 monopoly for Intel, how about we gift them a franchise that is just as profitable? At an AI summit in July 2025, Trump told the audience that he considered breaking up NVIDIA to give them a little competition, but aides told him it was not so easy or something like that. So no breaking up NVIDIA. But if Jensen Huang so respects and wants to work with Trump, then how about sharing some of NVIDIA's consumer surplus with Intel for the sake of national security? I hearken back to the 1960s and 1970s, when the U.S. military and large companies demanded that their semiconductor suppliers strike second sourcing deals with second sourcers, often another large semiconductor company. So the original owner licensed over their technology to the second sourcer, done via a transfer process. One of the most famous such deals took place in 1976 and then 1981. As a condition of putting an Intel CPU inside their PC, IBM demanded that Intel license and share their chip technology to a second source. That turned out to be AMD, and helped make AMD the critical second source for x86 chips in the 1980s. NVIDIA's edge over other AI chip companies, like AMD, is its proprietary software framework, CUDA. CUDA exhibits exceptional robustness, maturity, and backwards compatibility as compared to competing frameworks, and it is the basis of NVIDIA's 80% gross margins. So, the idea is, NVIDIA issues Intel a license for the IPs and patents in the NVIDIA CUDA and AI ecosystem, and does a technology transfer, with the goal being that Intel can produce NVIDIA-compatible chips in their American fabs to be sold as a second source. That Intel-AMD deal was structured as a mutually beneficial exchange of products based on those products' complexity and design effort as defined by a formula. So, if they'd like, they can have Intel issue an x86 license to NVIDIA in return. NVIDIA sells a CPU of their own called Grace, and they apparently bundle it together with their GPUs. If you buy the GPUs, you have to buy the CPUs too. Grace isn't an x86 chip, and I highly doubt that NVIDIA will want to convert it over to x86, but perhaps they do it to expand the x86 ecosystem. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas here. I don't know how much of the AI accelerator market that Intel can expect to get with its NVIDIA compatibles. NVIDIA made $150 billion in revenue and $89 billion in profits over the past 12 months. Let's assume that's the current market. Go back to the IBM PC. The PC compatibles took roughly about 30% in their first year, and 40% their second, as guys like Compaq, Columbia Data, and others entered. So let's say the compatibles get 20-30% of the AI chip market, to be conservative. That's $30-45 billion of product revenue potentially each year, enough to fund Intel's factories so long the AI boom continues. NVIDIA's gross margins and revenues will of course fall, but margins were pushing 80%, so I think they remain one of the world's largest companies by market cap. So I reckon they'll be fine. Maybe they can get a tariff credit or something. So I want to emphasize this is just a crazy idea. There will, of course, be many legal and technical objections, so most likely the government just does the obvious thing, the stuff we talked about earlier. But there are a few reasons why I like this idea so much. For one thing, it exercises both the company's product and manufacturing sides. With all the talk about national security, Intel's product half has sort of faded out of the conversation, but the products still matter. It was one of the first things mentioned by the board at Gelsinger's retirement announcement. Products lead the way. An NVIDIA second sourcing agreement allows Intel product to develop an in-demand, leading-edge product, but do it in the way that they are familiar with, by working closely with their folks at manufacturing. And Intel manufacturing can get comfortable working with its internal customer on a technically demanding high-volume product to clear the pipes and get its kitchen ready for opening to outside customers. No dealing with 7 very mean tech giant customers. Another thing I like to add is that second sourcers can help improve the overall ecosystem to everyone's benefit. If AI is going to create an intelligence explosion, then it would be nice to have more than just NVIDIA in there. This is more than by just cutting prices. They can also contribute, technically. AMD, the once second source copycat, has contributed several things to the x86 framework that were licensed back to Intel, like AMD 64. And finally, this whole idea has this sort of teach a man to fish thing. Intel's problems are so big that just repeatedly giving them fishes, i.e. cash infusions, will not solve the core issue at hand. We help them by teaching them a productive business. That has been the problem all this time. So let's make NVIDIA share theirs. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.